to the FTN NBA Podcast with your hosts, Adam Pfeiffer, Joe Metz, and Zach Graham.
Presented by the FTN Network.
Bringing you the analysis you need on breaking news, betting markets, and your fantasy lineups.
What is going on, everybody? Tuesday, January 4th, 2022, the first FTN NBA podcast of the new calendar year. I am your host, as always, Joe Metz, joined by my partner in crime, Zach Graham, Kweisenberg DFS, whether we're on the podcast, NBA streams, NFL streams. It seems like we are always doing something together for FTN. Zach, how were your holidays and how have things been over the last couple of weeks?
They were great, man. I mean, we did the I think it's the last time we were on the podcast feed was the Christmas live stream.
Yep.
Prepping for that Christmas Day slate. Always, in my opinion, the best day of NBA DFS. A lot of food, friends and family, and a lot of hoops, a lot of gambling. So the kind of the perfect combination there. And then we took off last week, had a good New Year's, etc. But you, I mean, it's good to see you back and healthy, man. We didn't pod last week, not just because of the holidays, but because you were in the health and safety protocols.
I was, It was pretty, it's always obviously you catch COVID where you least expect it. Like the small family gatherings is, of course, where it happened. Fully vaccinated, and I got hit by an absolute Mack truck. Like every symptom from vomiting to lightheadedness, fatigue, shortness of breath, everything. So I'm glad it's kind of rearing its head behind us now. Family's safe and healthy, and that's really all I can ask for. But I will say, I don't know if Serena has made it this far through the podcast. Thank you. But if you have, turn it off now, because the best thing about quarantine was having the house to myself with basketball on for like three nights. It was phenomenal. But we have a fun show today. Zach and I are going to go over a couple of things, just some standouts and takeaways over the last few weeks of the NBA and how things are shaping up as we approach the new year. And we are now, like, we're nearing the end of the first half of the season. All-star break, a mere, I believe, 5-6 weeks away. And there are, we're at the point in the season where trends have developed, teams struggle with certain, like, it's nothing is as fluky as it was in the beginning of the regular season anymore. So we'll hit on a pair of trends or takeaways as we enter 2022 each. And then I have a fun game for you, Zach. I'm going to give you like a blind taste test per se. I'm going to give you some stats for a trio of player pairings comparing two players. Okay. I want to know what player you would take. Mm-hmm. And then I'm trying, if you can guess who they are, great.
Uh-huh. Okay.
But if not, I'll tell you and it'll spark some discussion, because there have been a lot of standout players this year. And a lot of the opposite of players that everything pointed to them having a phenomenal season, and it just has not come to fruition yet. Before we dive in, the one thing I want to hit on to cross our T's and dot our I's, if you have not checked out the new DFS Pick Tracker on FTN Daily, completely free. Zach, you plug it on the show, which is also free all the time, 5 days a week. You can find picks for Top Prop, Super Draft. You can find picks for Prize Picks. You can find picks for Jock Market. You can find picks for Underdog, Monkey Knife Fight. Like anything you can think of, we have picks there for literally every sport, from NBA, as we're talking about now, to esports, to MMA, to NHL. Speaking of NHL, Chris Meany, if you aren't following this man in NHL Prize Picks, you are literally missing out on consistent streams of income. But it's all free. Go to ftndaily.com. You can find it at the top bar, the top menu bar, of the new user interface and new site layout, which is extremely user-friendly. So check that out, the DFS Pick Tracker, for all of your niche site needs. So why don't we dive into some takeaways as we head into the new year? I'll start with you, Zach. I see each of us have like a team-oriented one, and then more like a multiplayer-oriented takeaway. So let's start with like a team takeaway that you have heading into 2022.
Yeah, and it's a team that we've talked about already, I think, multiple times this season at length, but they just keep performing. It's the Chicago Bulls. As we sit here on Tuesday, January 4th, recording after those games tipped off, a little five-game slate tonight on a Tuesday, sitting in first in the East, 25-10 are the Bulls with a two-game lead over your Milwaukee Bucks and Stefano's Brooklyn Nets. And obviously that's just on the surface impressive. I don't care what team you are.
Yeah.
You know, you're almost halfway through the season now. You know, I was looking actually trying to calculate Spurs tanking odds at this point of the season with different postponements and just the schedule varying for different teams. Most teams have played between 35 and 38 games. So like I said, we're nearing that halfway point. And to see this Bulls team be at the top at this point of the season, like, it's a lot different. We look at them when they're like, well, I don't know what they were, 7-1 or whatever the first time we really brought them up. But the fact that they've continued this, and it's been a recent run that's vaulted them to the top. 8-game win streak here for Chicago. But the most impressive thing is that they continue to do this missing, I mean, every important rotation player on this team at one time or another. And that also it clearly varies. Like, you look at Patrick Williams out for the remainder of the regular season early in the year to the detriment of my best ball teams going. So that was kind of the first big dick kick, if you will, for those teams. But then they've missed, I mean, Alex Caruso with the foot sprain, right? You've missed Vucevic, Zach LaVine, DeMar DeRozan, Kobe White first recovering from surgery. Then he was in the protocols. Rookie Io DeSumo was in the protocols. Freaking Javonte Green was in the protocols, and now he's out for something else, and he's been starting in place of Pat Williams. And we could keep going and talk about Troy Brown Jr. and Tony Bradley and all these other guys that also spent time in the protocols. But the fact that they've been able to keep it together, and not just keep it together, but be the best team in the East record-wise is pretty amazing. So I got to give this team their props for where they are. But let's dive in a little bit deeper to how they've gotten here, right? And I mentioned that 8-game win streak. First of all, Chicago, to my recollection, was really the first team that the NBA caved in and said, okay, we're going to postpone a series of games for you guys because of all the absences you had. Yep. You saw, I think that was like mid-December.
Like I think they postponed 14th. Two or three games. Like the entire, it was their 5 days worth of games. I think it was two or three games that week.
Yeah, it looks like Detroit and Toronto games, the 14th and the 16th, where the week or 10 days prior, you saw Charlotte being the first team that got hit up and up and down the depth chart, and none of their games were canceled. So I remember at the time thinking, okay, like what triggers this? Is that because the Bulls have so many all-star caliber players, they play in a bigger market? Whatever it was, that certainly helped them to have those two games postponed. Those could have been losses. Then they had another game postponed because of Toronto's COVID issues. So they had three games during this stretch that were postponed. So again, taking those off the schedule, opportunities to lose taken again off the schedule. So you look at the 8 games they've won: Lakers, Houston, Pacers, Hawks, Pacers, Wizards, Magic. And keep in mind, over the last 10 days, the Pacers have had a lot of issues, both with COVID and injury. Atlanta has been decimated by COVID and injury over the last 2+ weeks. So to me, that 4-game stretch isn't super impressive. It's not impressive to beat the COVID-riddled Wizards. The Magic, even if they were full strength, is not a super impressive win. So the win streak, I mean, I don't care who you are, it's impressive to win 8 NBA games in a row. I'm not trying to take away from it, but to put it into context, I do still think that even though they sit at the top of the East, they remain third at best for me. I think as the season plays out, barring some sort of crazy injuries or trades or whatever, it's going to be Brooklyn and Milwaukee fighting it out for that top seed when all is said and done. But Chicago has thrown their hat into the ring, and they're certainly not backing down. Another issue I have, or maybe not issue, worry, is the defensive rating. It's at 11th, which out of 30 teams is just fine. You're above average there. But you look at the teams that are around them, and like, does it make you feel good to be essentially equal in defensive rating with the Minnesota Timberwolves, the Oklahoma City Thunder, the Los Angeles Lakers, who have been shit I mean, on both ends of the floor for what they should be, right? So, like, yeah. If you're in that range, I don't know if, like, I think the number 11th in defensive rating is more impressive than what they've actually put together on that end of the floor. And again, Milwaukee, 9th, Brooklyn, 6th, those teams performing better as a whole, in my opinion, even though it's not totally showing in the standings. I mean, but again, I think I'm just hating every time I've said something bad about the Bulls. They reel off a couple wins against impressive teams earlier in the season when I was saying that was going to derail them. And now, you know, I'm sure they will continue to rattle off wins and remain near the top. So, yeah, it's definitely a big standout for me that they're sitting in first as the calendar turns to 2022.
This seems like a moment of personal growth that you just called yourself out for hating now after all the slander. But yeah, I mean, they've been phenomenal. And I think, like, you hit on, like, DeMar DeRozan's play, the first player in NBA history back-to-back nights to have a game-winning three. He's been playing like, I'm not going to say like an MVP. He's currently 5th right now in MVP odds, 28-1 on DraftKings Sportsbook.
Yeah.
LeBron James is 40-1. On DraftKings.
Really?
That seems like a smack. Obviously, we aren't saying he's going to win. LeBron, in my opinion, should be more like 15-20-1 at worst.
Yeah.
40-1. So, looking to bet, like, I think that's like Steph Curry still is the overwhelming favorite, which we can get into on another podcast I don't agree with. But 40-1 for LeBron, 28-1 for DeMar DeRozan.
Dude, DeMar DeRozan. I just want to mention the DeMar DeRozan MVP talk was in my notes there for this segment, and that parentheses I put LOL. That just tells you what I think. Well, I love DeMar.
I get it. He's playing arguably the best basketball of his career, but yeah, he's absolutely no shot at MVP. No shot. And that's the thing is that is no disrespect to him.
Not at all.
So I want to move on to another team in the East that has pleasantly surprised me: the Charlotte Hornets. They haven't done anything groundbreaking this season. I was on their over 38.5 wins before the season. It felt a win or two too low. They're sitting at 19-19 right now. They are eighth, I believe, in the East. But you want to talk about a team that has dealt with the difficulties of COVID. At some point or another, their entire rotation was out with COVID. Mm-hmm. Some together, some separate. Any mixture of LaMelo Ball, Miles Bridges, PJ Washington, Mason Plumlee, Terry Rozier, and Cody Martin. Just to name, that's 6 players. There were more that were in and out of the protocols, but those are arguably their most important 6 guys outside of Kelly Oubre and Gordon Hayward, who have luckily found themselves avoiding the protocols. But they have all been out at some point or another, together, separate, whatever it may be. They're already halfway to their projected win total, and 7 of their 19 wins have come against teams that are top 7 in their conference or better: Golden State, Cleveland, Brooklyn, the Wizards twice, Denver, and Memphis. They are beating teams, like, obviously they're beating good teams, those 7 games. They're losing to good teams as well, but they're also beating teams that they should beat, which I think is a very good sign when you have a team this young. They're not necessarily constantly falling to the level of their competition. This team has and will continue to have a massive ceiling. I think the biggest takeaway for me is just that they're gelling a little more quickly than I had anticipated. And the other standout is Gordon Hayward's been healthy this season. Has he missed a game? I probably should have looked that up prior. He has not had an extended absence. But Gordon Hayward,
he's missed one game.
So the thing is, you look at Gordon Hayward's last 3 years. Or I think 4 since he signed that contract after his career year in Utah. I don't know if he's made it 38 games before without missing multiple games. So I do think that is a very, very good sign and a pleasant surprise from the Hornets, playing at the fastest pace in the NBA, just over 101 possessions per game. They're 3rd overall in offensive rating. That's insane. The issue, though, is that they're 28th in defensive rating. Like, you can put Josh Kelechi at center and he will drop a 2020 game on the Charlotte Hornets. Their defense is down there with Portland and Houston as the 3 worst defensive units in basketball. If you literally tighten up the screws and somehow sneak to league average defensively, you're looking at a very, very strong team, assuming you don't see a drop off anywhere else. So Charlotte Hornets are surprising me. I think they are the very worst play-in team this year, but I feel very good about that 38.5 win over.
Yeah, and you should. I guess only really two things for me to add on to that.
Yep.
I guess three. We talked about the Hornets too, kind of early in the season when I was prognosticating on the overreaction pod that LaMelo would end up being the MVP of the league this year. While that's not going to come correct, it does seem like the Hornets are set up for a nice little stretch run here. You know, you mentioned the COVID struggles, that they remain at 500 in that eight seed, only two games out of the six where they wouldn't have to play in the play-in. And one thing that stands out to me, 24 of their 38 games so far on the road. So a very backloaded schedule in terms of home games, which I don't think that can really hurt them. 9-5 at home this season, 10-14 on the road. And then I guess the last thing, talking about Gordon Hayward, off the top of your head, you know how many All-Star appearances he has?
Does he have none?
He's got one. He had one.
That was that year, that career year in Utah that got under contract with Boston.
$180 million he's made in his career off one All-Star appearance, and due $90 million still over the next three, including this year on that four-year $120 million contract. So, maybe the contract doesn't look great, but certainly contributing to a team that has a bright future ahead, certainly at the end of the season.
Yeah, 100% agreed. So why don't you segue us into your second takeaway, a little more player-focused than overall team-focused.
Sure. Getting a little bit of news here now. It looks like Larry Nance into the health protocols for the Blazers. So Portland just can't get right, man.
I need a sidebar for 30 seconds.
Sure.
How the hell did Portland control the game from start to finish on Monday night against the Atlanta Hawks, who, yes, the Atlanta Hawks are dealing with COVID issues. John Collins out. They've had their wings out. They got Kevin Huerter back yesterday. They got Danilo Gallinari back yesterday. Cam Reddish was ruled out. They have Trae Young, who is one of the best point guards in the NBA right now. You can argue he is the second best point guard right now. If you saw that tweet I put out today with the player A and B comps, one was Steph Curry. The one that 95% of the people voted for was Trae Young. How the fuck do you lose to that Portland team without Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum, a misconditioned and hampered Yusuf Nurkic? I just can't. This team, Portland, is like the most frustrating team in the NBA because they have too much talent to be as bad as they are, but they win the games you bet against them. So, sorry.
Is it stupid to say that I think the more impressive performance in that game, not just because they won, but because of the caliber of players that they each are? Trae, 56-14. That's fantastic, obviously. Yeah. No knock on that. But 43 points from Anthony Simons.
Yeah, that was awesome.
13 of 21, 9 of 16 from 3, 8 of 8 from the free throw line, 7 assists, 3 boards for good measure. Like, that was his career game. And I thought that should have gotten the headlines this morning since they picked up the win.
Yeah, it should have. And, you know, he had the post-game interview. I guess his grandpa had died 24 hours prior to that game. So it's obviously always cool to see things like that, those kind of narratives play out. Obviously not cool that those things happen, but how the players kind of own those and run with it. So he's been playing great this year when he's been on the court, obviously.
Yeah, obviously love to see somebody go out there in a tough time in their personal life and be able to have elevated success on the court, kind of use that as some emotional fuel, you know, an emotional night for Anthony there. But we'll get back on track here. You know, I'm always down for a good sidebar, Joe. But yeah, my second little takeaway here, maybe it's a little silly, but you know, I'm a fan of both of these guys and have been for a while. What's in the water in Turkey?
Oh, here we go. This is an NBA, not a EuroLeague podcast. I'm gonna preface with
but,
that.
But let's, okay. Over the recent history, like in our lifetimes of fandom here, as NBA fans, NBA nerds, etc., think about all the Turkish forwards and centers. The fact that you can probably off the top of your head name two or three, I think is pretty impressive for a country that's not the biggest country in the world by any means and has had plenty of basketball success there. The Turkish league, a fine league in its own right. You think about the guys that have come over to the States just in the last, I don't know, 15 years, right? Like, we've got, obviously, Enos Kanter, Enos Freedom, as he's known now, that's still in the league. But, like, and I guess he's also technically still in the league. Ersan Ilyasova, right, came into the league in 05, now on a 10-day, I think, with the Bulls. Not sure if that's expired or not yet. But going back even further, like, Mehmet Okur was,
Utah. I forgot about him.
NBA champion with the Pistons in 04. You know, long career with the Jazz when they couldn't get over the hump. Lakers and Spurs during that run, they just, you know, I think they made it to the West Finals. I know they made it at least once. You know, Deron Williams, heyday there in Utah. But
Carlos Boozer, AK-47. That was a really, really good team.
Yeah. I like that team now better in hindsight than I did as a teenager. You know, ridiculous Spurs fan. Could not like those guys at the time. You know, I talk about Okur, Omer Asik, you know, who stole a bunch of money from the Bulls and the Rockets and the Pelicans. but you know,
I forgot about him. Oh my God.
Had some great years with the Bulls, some great performances. Mm-hmm. You know, our Philly contingent, maybe Tyreek remembers Furkan Aldemir, played about 40 games for the Sixers, but over a three-year span, he was on the bench there. I remember him from my early days of NBA DFS. Given Adam Pfeiffer, our lovable co-host, performance in the Christmas edition of Who He Played For, I doubt he remembers the days of Semi Erden with the Celtics and his Cleveland Cavaliers back at the beginning of the 2010s, but he did play 69 very nice NBA games. So again, just running down the list of these centers and forwards coming out of Turkey over the last 15 years. And I guess I would be remiss if I didn't mention Hedo Turkoglu, you know, went to the finals with the Magic, played a year for my Spurs in that year, the 0.04 year when they lost to Derek Fisher on that shot.
Yep.
That was painful. And then Turkoglu also stealing money eventually from the Magic, from the Raptors for sure. I don't know if Josh Kruger, our resident Canadian, remembers the Sprite and pizza commercials that Hedo Turkoglu was in. But Turkoglu started out as a swingman, became more of a front court, you know, could have been a stretch five in today's NBA with the size that he got up to at the end of his career. So, you know, had to mention Turkoglu in there as well. And you know, we're not even talking about the guards, Furkan Korkmaz, Shane Larkin, who was in the league for a while now in the Euro League. You know, so Chetty Osman for the Cavaliers, obviously. But all that to say this, you know, I mentioned what's in the water in Turkey. How about these Turkish rookie centers this year? I've talked up my guy Alperen Şengün, MVP of the Turkish league at age 18. You know, I've said multiple times that I wish I had the video of me reacting to the Spurs taking Josh Primo over Alperen Şengün. It was a lot of expletives and all that, a lot of screaming, yelling. I think I said who to Josh Primo. I knew who he was, but like, why?
Yeah.
Anyways, he ended up going to the Rockets, as everybody, or most, I would think everybody listening to this podcast knows. And per 36, I mean, this guy, almost 18 points a game, 9.5 rebounds, 5 assists, almost 2 steals and 2 blocks per 36 minutes for Alperen Şengün at age 19. I wish he was a Spur. I think he's going to continue to be a fantastic fantasy asset and develop into a really fine NBA player. And then looking at the Miami Heat, we've gotten to see this guy showcased recently with their COVID and injury struggle. I guess for them in the front court, it's more injury struggles with Bam's UCL injury and then Dwayne Dedman, I think, shin or knee. But Omer Yurtseven, originally playing in the EuroLeague with Fenerbahce in Turkey, a good player there, made his EuroLeague debut back in 2015. Did play one of the preseason games. You know, we bring those EuroLeague teams or the Chinese teams over to play preseason games. Played against the Nets in 2015, had 8-7 with a block in his 15 minutes there. So this guy has been on the radar for a long time, played 2 years at NC State, 2016 and 2017, was actually suspended by the NCAA for the beginning of his first year there because of the fact that he played professionally for Fenerbahce, and then transferred, had to sit out a year, played at Georgetown. And a rookie in the NBA, not by decision, was undrafted in the 2020 draft, signed by the Oklahoma City Thunder, waived the next day, and then ended up on their G League affiliate, the Oklahoma City Blue. Put up some pretty massive G League stats over the summer, signed with the Miami Heat. Obviously, that's where he is now. We made a good amount of money off playing Yurtseven in the summer league, so we were not surprised when we had some success in the regular season jumping on Yurtseven in this elevated role with both Bam and Dwayne Dedmon out for this team. Per 36 this season, Omer Yurtseven, 14 points, 15 boards, 1.5 assists, one steal, and 1.5 blocks per 36 minutes for Yurtseven. So again, I ask, what is in the water in Turkey? I love these Turkish centers. It's not just with these two guys. We went through the history of it.
Yeah.
I love them. It's crazy how many how many centers can come out of one and small country.
And it's the thing is, these guys you're naming, whether it's now or at some point in their career, have been like a very impactful player.
Yeah.
Which is really cool. Like every single one just brought back a very nostalgic memory, particularly Ersan.
Yeah, oh yeah.
But yeah, I mean, like you said, like Şengün and Yurtseven, like these are two guys we've exploited in both the betting market and the DFS market. You know, there's those two or three games when Christian Wood was out, two of those three, Şengün was phenomenal. There was one foul trouble, something happened, just didn't play very well. And Yurtseven, in the midst of some great basketball, and I know Josh Gross continues to make money on his over 12 or 13.5 rebounds. So these guys just know how to just eat glass, and that's probably what they had for breakfast in Turkey or something. I don't know what it was. I'm going to transition to my take quick before we get to the best part of the show. So I understand the transition from the collegiate level to the NBA. There's growing pains, particularly from an efficiency standpoint. But I'm about to name three rookies right now. Only one of them played a year in college. One played, obviously, overseas Down Under, and Jalen Green played in the G League for a year. These rookie guards, Cade Cunningham, Jalen Green, the two preseason favorites to win Rookie of the Year. Right now, Cade Cunningham third to win Rookie of the Year. Jalen Green is seventh, and then Josh Giddey the third is fifth. Three of the four favorites are forwards in Evan Mobley, Scottie Barnes, and Franz Wagner. And I think aside from, I know Cade Cunningham missed time, Jalen Green missed about 3 weeks. But aside from that, there have just been glaringly inefficient basketball being played by some of these guys. And this isn't to discredit what any of them is doing doing on the court. You know, Josh Giddey in particular has been playing phenomenal. Just recorded the youngest triple-double in NBA history. But none of these three players are shooting higher than 39.5% from the field. None are shooting above 32.7% from three. Cade Cunningham, a 40% three-point shooter in his 1 year at Oklahoma State, is shooting 31.8% from three, and he's quite literally allowed to shoot whenever he wants. Jalen Green, probably the highest volume player of these three, 39.5% from the field, 32.7% from three. He is, you know, a bad team. I did think he'd be fed a little more, but he is surrounded by a lot of high usage and high volume players in Kevin Porter Jr., Eric Gordon when he's on the court. Garrison Matthews has been shooting like 8-9 threes a game, and Christian Wood in the front court. And Josh Giddey, 39% from the field, 26.1% from three. We know Josh Giddey's game isn't predicated really on scoring. You and I had talked on stream a few days ago, and he had that double-double where he failed to log a point. But 26.1% from three is a bit of a head scratcher. So I'm just kind of surprised that we are now nearly 40 games into the season and these three are still struggling pretty mightily from the field. We've seen the upside from these three. As I mentioned, Josh Giddey's triple-double when SGA and Lu Dort were out. We saw, I want to say it was mid-November maybe, Jalen Green absolutely lit up the core. I think he had hit like 8 threes or something like that. And we saw Cade Cunningham. He logged a triple-double, didn't he? I think he's had more than one.
I believe he has.
But like these guys, like again, I'm not taking anything away from these guys. I think all three have very bright futures in the NBA. If I had to rank career wise right now, I think I go Cade, Josh Giddey, Jalen Green. You can subject to change, whatever may happen, but all three are struggling mightily with their shot through the first 40-ish games of their NBA career.
Yeah, Cade Cunningham did get that one triple-double, rivaling Kemba Walker for the weakest triple-double of all time. That game went to overtime against the Lakers. That was the Isaiah Stewart, Bron punch game. 38 minutes, 6 of 21 from the field, 13 points, 12 boards, 10 assists in that one for Cade Cunningham. I think I'm least surprised about the shooting woes of Josh Giddey. That was the knock on him. Yeah. Coming in to the draft. So not surprised that he's, struggling. Jalen Green, a volume scorer. I don't know if he's ever going to be a sharpshooter, so to speak. But I do think as the season progresses, both Jalen Green and Cade Cunningham, I expect those numbers to come up slightly, not a ton. I do think it's a smaller sample size with both of those guys, because obviously Cade missed time at the beginning of the season. He missed time in the health and safety protocols, and Jalen Green missed a ton of time with that ankle injury. So still a smaller sample for those guys than some of the other rookies, certainly compared to a guy like Josh Giddey. But I guess before you throw these, blind taste test questions at me, I got some questions for you.
Oh, uh-oh.
Ooh, actually, it's really just one question and then another point. Out of rookies who have shot 15 or more three-pointers this season in the NBA, who is the best from beyond the arc percentage-wise? 15 or more attempts, rookies.
15 is a very low number.
It is.
It's a very low number. Is it Şengün?
It is not Şengün. I don't think Şengün has shot 15 threes.
Has he not? My other guess was going to be Scottie Barnes, but I think his volume is a little too high.
Don't fucking listen to me. Şengün shot 39 threes, but no, it is not him. He's sitting at 31%.
Okay. Who is it?
He can shoot the piss out of it.
Oh, it's Jock. Oh, let's go.
It's Jock Landale.
Really?
So, I had to sneak in the Spurs corner. Jock Landale, 50% from three so far this season. When he went down to the G League, he was tearing it up. Unsurprisingly to me, if you watch him in the Olympics, this guy can really score it. I do think he's going to be a weapon. He's now overtaken Drew Eubank's spot in that rotation, similar to how I overtake this podcast for a few minutes every episode to talk about the Spurs. Josh Primo also shooting 41% from three. So if you want the shooting, you work with Coach Chip England down there in San Antonio. So after that diversion, I apologize, Joe.
No, you are.
I do not apologize to the listeners. I know you come here waiting for that Spurs news. Had to just interject there.
So moving on, we're gonna move into. I took my morning. Probably should have been working. I guess this is considered work. I compiled three different player pairings. Comparing some blind player stats. I included in every single one points, assists, rebounds, player efficiency rating, field goal percentage, and three-point percentage. Okay. I also, if you want, I can include the number of games they've played. But that can obviously be a topic of conversation. And for one of them, I included turnovers. So it's going to be kind of a head-to-head. The first thing I want you to do is tell me which player you want.
Okay.
And second, if you can, try and guess who's who.
Yeah.
You ready? Works for you ready? Me. Okay. The first pairing. So 24 points per game, 7.3 assists, 4.1 rebounds per game, 40.2% from the field, 32.4% from three, and a player efficiency rating of 19.5.
Okay.
Second player, 26.9 points per game, 4.5 assists, 5.0 rebounds, 49.4% from the field, and 36.2% from three. His player efficiency rating is 23.4. If you need me to repeat anything, let me know.
Say the first one again. I got the second one in terms of the stats.
Yeah. So I'll run it back. I'll just keep it brief. 24, 7, and 4 per game, 40% from the field, 32% from three.
Give me the second guy. 27 a game. Is that one of the Bulls?
It is.
That's DeMar then, right?
It is. It is your 28-1 MVP candidate, DeMar DeRozan. He's playing in 32 games this year. He's averaging 27 points a game.
Yeah, no, he's. I mean, we've talked.
That's
about
remarkable. Him a lot, right? Yeah, that's remarkable.
Is the other one like a Bradley Beal?
No, it's not Bradley Beal. But that's not the worst. That's a pretty good guess.
Okay, I'm just trying to think because you said 24 points, right? Like I'm trying to think of guys. Yep. Unfortunately, don't have the points per game leaders memorized in my head. that it's got to be like a Booker or a Lillard or something
bingo,
like that.
Bingo. It's Damian Lillard.
Okay. Well, you know, the fourth fucking guess. Got it.
Yeah. Booker was actually one I was going out. One of the comparisons I was going to do is Booker and SGA, but then I was like, all right, like, as I got further through the counting stats, Booker was just getting better and better. So I was like, all right, fuck this. But yeah, so Damian Lillard, we know the type of player he is. I'm not saying I will take on my team right now if I'm starting a team. I'm not going to take DeMar DeRozan over Damian Lillard. I'm not saying that. But he's clearly not been the player. Right now, if you are starting a team, you would take DeMar DeRozan over Damian. I would not.
I would.
There's a take we need. Okay. Interesting. Interesting. Wow.
I mean, he's let me back that up a little bit, right? Like his assist numbers are down now, I believe. Again, I don't have his stats pulled up in front of me, but I believe the assist numbers
are down compared
to what he did in San Antonio because of the team that he's on. He's just a better all-around player than Damian Lillard is at this point. If I want a fucking three shot from 36 feet away, I'm going to Dame over almost everybody else in the league, probably besides Steph. But like, if I want somebody who can facilitate the offense, get on the boards and score from all three levels, like DeMar DeRozan does not shoot threes.
He's a king of mid-range.
He shoots a couple right per game. I think like maybe one and a half.
But the thing is, he can if he needs to. That's the thing.
What did you say with the 3-point stats again? His was better.
His is 36.2%. Dame 32.
So it's a much lower volume, obviously, with DeMar DeRozan, he's still shooting. I mean, 36% is great for DeMar DeRozan. Mm-hmm. If he could do that on better volume, I mean, he wouldn't, you know, we would be talking about him more day to day, and I wouldn't put LOL next to him having MVP chances or discussion, right? But like, God, he's been so good.
Yeah, he has. And I think this is more, again, no discredit to Dame, but he just like, this is close to 6 points per game, less than we're used to him averaging. You know, we're looking at like 6% worse from three, 5% worse from like something is clearly not right with Dame. Supporting cast has been in and out of the lineup. Like Portland is on a historic, like I was talking to one of my buddies about this today, like a historically bad pace defensively right now. So there's a mess in Portland, and you know, Damian Lillard's play has come around quite a bit, but it's certainly not the level that they had expected or desire. So let's head into the second one. This is my favorite one. I'm going to leave the third one like what I think is a gimme, and it's going to be more fun for us. The second one I think is actually like really fun. So player number one, 19.6 points per game, 7.3 rebounds, 3.7 assists, 47% from the field, 31% from three.
I know who that is.
Okay.
Who is it? Say the That's Russ. It's got to be Russ.
It's not.
Fuck.
3.7 assists per game? No, that's not
Russ. I missed that part. I was listening to the points and the threes. Like, I know Russ is just under 20. God dang.
Okay. Second player, 18.3 points per game, 7.6 rebounds per game, 3.9 assists, 45% from the field, 28.7% from three. Who are you taking? If you need me to repeat anything, let me know.
Sure. I mean, this sounds like overpaid forwards to me.
Well,
I think one of them is Tobias.
Yes, you are right on that one.
Okay, one of them is Tobias. And who would you compare? Who has? Like you're comparing. This is they're at this like relatively the same position, right?
Yeah, you can argue these two are the exact same.
Okay, it's not like Tobias
and
point guard.
No,
okay.
The biggest difference was DeMar DeRozan and Dame. Like, these two are both, like, you can argue a 3-4.
Can you read the stats off again just so I can pick? Now that I was trying to think who
they were. So Tobias is the 18.3, 7.6, 3.9, 28% from three. The other player, 19.6 points, 7.3 rebounds, 31% from three, 3.7 assists per game. I'll give you one clue. The player in question is making over $30 million less this year than Tobias Harris.
Miles Bridges.
Yep. Nailed it.
Nice. I guess I should have picked before, but
this is so Bridges, I've kind of been enamored with him this year, you know that, but he's been great. But holy shit, has Tobias Harris been a horrible contract. Like horrible. Yeah. We knew when this was signed, he is not a max contract player. Mm-hmm. You look at, like, Philly fans are fed up with him. Look at the game last night. He gets the ball inbounded to him close to half court and just sits there. Zero idea that there are 2 seconds left on the shot clock. Turns the ball over, gets booed. Good. Your fans should hold you accountable. Then he proceeds to kind of bully a player down low, hit a turnaround off the glass and score, and they cheer. And he yells at them not to cheer. Like, dude, it doesn't work like that. You do something boneheaded and stupid, you should be held accountable. You score and do your, like, and like they should be able to support you. Like, I think Tobias Harris, like, is there are so many issues in Philly right now. He is a massive one. Like, he is not, like, getting talked about enough about how bad he's been.
I mean, do you think that, and again, I think that the Philly contingent of the FTN Daily NBA subs could definitely give us a piece of their mind about Tobias and what's ailing him this year. But off the top of my head, again, Philly, not the team that I've watched the most of this year. But do you think that maybe Tobias is suffering without Ben Simmons on the floor?
I do. I think I'm sure that he's losing a bit of volume because Tyrese Maxey is going to demand more volume than a Ben Simmons. You can argue Tyrese Maxey's their second best offensive starter, him or Seth Curry. But I also think that he doesn't have, like, you know, people knock Ben Simmons all you want. He is one of the best passers in the NBA, and he knows how to get guys to their spots and get him open. Tyrese Maxey doesn't know that yet. And I think that is something Tobias Harris is struggling with, getting open in his spots. But the thing is, sure, he's been open enough where he's still shooting under 29% from three. That's really, really, really bad. So,
yeah,
I mean, give me Miles Bridges, obviously, over Tobias Harris right now. So we're going to move on to the last one. This one should be very quick, very easy.
Okay.
And me saying it's on brand is the biggest clue I can give you. Player one, 19.6 points per game, 8.3 assists, 8.1 rebounds.
Okay, there's Russ.
Yep, okay. 4.8 turnovers per game. Player number two, 17.8 points, 8.8 assists, 8.4 rebounds, 34% from three, 2.3 turnovers per game. And you know who it is.
Yeah, give me DeJounte.
Yes. this is kind of an unfair comparison. I was going back and forth with my good friends who are eventually going to come on this podcast and have an NBA podcast of their own. I was kind of sending them these, gauging their thoughts. Mm-hmm. And one said, like, that is an unfair comparison, but I love DeJounte. Like, this is both an indictment of just like Russ, like, stat-wise, mm-hmm. he's taking a small step back. He's not averaging a triple-double. But the thing is, if you don't go anything beyond his points, rebounds, and assists, you'd be like, oh, he's doing well for the Lakers. He's doing what they want him to. He's averaging almost 5 turnovers a game.
Mm-hmm.
Player efficiency rating nearly 4 points lower than DeJounte's, 30% from 3. And the problem is he's making $44 million, and he's taking really dumb shots. Like, I don't know how else to put it. Like, I could go back and forth. Me and my buddy who I talked to about this, like, we literally just DM each other Russell Westbrook, like meme threads every day on Twitter. Mm-hmm. But DeJounte, holy shit, he's so good at basketball. He is so good. He is quickly developed into, like, one of my favorite players in the league. Where would you, before we head out, where would you put him, like, your top point guards this season, where would he be on that list?
I mean, I guess some of it is like, you know, do you consider, like, James Harden's been playing point guard, but he's not the point guard tomorrow, right?
Correct. I'm not considering James Harden. Like, I'm talking, like, for me, like, to kind of help lead the discussion, like, for me, he's, like, right outside the top five. Like, for me, my top five, no order right now, would be mm-hmm. Steph, Ja, Trey, Chris Paul, Drew Holiday, and how they're playing this season. I think DeJounte would probably be six.
Yeah, it's... I don't think I can quite put him over LaMelo.
Oh, that's a good call. Okay, that's my issue with LaMelo though. Like,
he's not bringing on what DeJounte does on the defensive end.
Correct.
Maybe that's like my fantasy basketball brain overruling my real hoops brain. Certainly overruling my Spurs bias brain. but I mean, shit, dude. Like, even if it's like seventh at worst right now, right? Like,
the
point guard position, one of the most widely available positions in basketball, certainly at the NBA level. I always think it's much easier to replace somebody at the guard than it is on the wing, or certainly down low in terms of being elite. And if you told Spurs fans or NBA fans in general that we would be legitimately, you know, deciding between DeJounte Murray being the sixth or the seventh best point guard in the league on January 4th, people would have probably said you were crazy. And I know that he's developed into, I think, the untouchable player right now for the Spurs. Like, what could they possibly be getting offered back from any contender that they would give up on DeJounte Murray, who's on a fantastic contract? I love that you brought this around to being like, we've now talked about the Spurs for like 10 minutes on this podcast and we haven't even gone an hour. So I love that you brought me back here. But like, DeJounte, I believe, is getting
paid. He's making $16 million this year.
Yeah, because him and Derek White are on very similar contracts, and they have him for essentially 16 and a half a year, including this year, all the way through the end of the 23-24 season. So, I mean,
which is why you know, we had discussed earlier in the year, like, one of these guys is probably going to be an asset in the trade market. I think it's pretty evident that it's going to be Derek White.
And to be honest, like, I think a Derek White Thad Young package is what's going to be departing from this team before the trade deadline here in almost a few weeks now, right? Like, holy, isn't that a February trade deadline? Let's look up the trade deadline date. Cause you know, we've already talked about the trade deadline I did my little solo pod messing with the trade machine. Trade deadline NBA 2022, Thursday, February 10th. 3 p.m. Eastern, so just a month. So maybe we fire the trade machine back up on Thursday or next week or something.
I think we have to. I'm going to be flying to Vegas on February 10th. That's going to be a fun day. Wow.
Oh, boy. You're going to have to buy that in-flight Wi-Fi.
I know. I'm going to have to. Otherwise, my phone might not be able to. Like, if I turn airplane mode off, like, I have Underdog, Shams, and Woj notifications on.
Yeah.
In addition, like, the ESPN, so, like, my phone might just malfunction once I turn airplane mode off. So, but I mean, he's like $16 million a year for him right now is a massive bargain. And like you said, like, it's not like his contract is up after this year and he's going to go in then. Because the thing is, if his contract were hypothetically up after this year, he would be a max player going into the offseason. So it's really cool to see what he's doing.
And he's the highest paid player on that team. Like, they have a lot of contracts that are movable.
Speaking of the Spurs, Jock Landale in the game, Joe Weiskamp in the game.
They're losing bad.
Down 22, 8.5 minutes left in the game. But Trey Jones and Big Body still on the court. Josh Primo, 11 points, 5 rebounds in a very, very quick. Let me double check his playing time. You are not allowed to say let's go for Josh Primo after what you said earlier.
Oh, come on. Come on.
Fair. 11, 5, and 3 in 19 minutes. He's playing really well today, obviously.
For Primo? I mean,
Jones, but yeah.
That guy has been phenomenal here about 10 miles down the road from you for the G League Austin Spurs. Mm-hmm. He's been great down there. And again, G League stats are not one-to-one to the NBA, of course. But, I mean, I think you could make the argument that the G League is the second best league in the world. At worst, it's third.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's I think it is the closest that comparison you can make. Yeah. Like, college, just throw it out the window.
Yeah. I mean, dude, to have DeJounte for 3 more years, Derek White, if they don't trade him, for 4 more, Primo for 4, Vassell for 3. You know, you've got I feel like they've got pieces here to start putting together something that resembles a rebuild, something that resembles a winning team, because it's not there yet, but this is a team that has not And again, I promise this is the last Spurs fucking take, so we can get out of here and everybody can, I'm sure multiple people have turned the pot off at this point, but RC Buford does not give out bad contracts. He just doesn't. You know, you've got plenty of contracts coming off the books this year. Bryn Forbes, Lonnie Walker. I don't think Lonnie ends up sticking with the team. I hope he does, but he probably should go get paid more somewhere else. I think the Spurs probably going to allocate some of their available funds to extending guys like Keldon Johnson, Devin Vassell, if he continues his ascent, etc. So it will be interesting to see how that develops. Again, they're setting themselves up. Big loss tonight. Keep the tank going. A top three pick would do wonders for this team's outlook.
I like it. Well, I appreciate everyone tuning in for a quick 45 minutes with us. We'll be back on Thursday, or I guess episode release this Friday, January 7th. So this, if you are listening, likely Wednesday, January 5th. But appreciate it for the FTN NBA podcast. I am Joe, joined by Zach. Enjoy your night, and we will see you in about 48 hours.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the FTN NBA podcast with Adam, Joe, and Zach. Make sure to follow your hosts on Twitter at APPfeiffer24, at JMets34, and at KawhiZenbergDFS. Hit that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.